Yeah, hello, folks. Glad to see all of you here tonight in the Mysterion Truth Bible Room. We're continuing and studying the Koine Greek of the New Testament this evening. Tonight is going to be well, it looks like we're losing everybody. Tonight's going to be another review again. We'll prep for another time or two, and then we're going to go on to adjectives. And I just want to reiterate the fact that as we study the scriptures, we're actually looking at an English translation of the original Koine Greek. I believe that our translation in the King James is adequate. I believe that when I was a younger man, which wasn't too long ago, I learned the mystery. I learned my calling through the English translation, through the King James translation. So it's not like we, you know, thoroughly need the Koine, but in fact, the fact of the matter is that as we read the scriptures, we can have a more thorough translation of especially our New Testament, and sometimes this really makes a difference. And so I do want to say that no matter what, I personally am going to continue on this course until I'm not on this planet anymore, because I do see an extreme value in it. One thing I wanted to mention is I really want to open up a Koine Greek New Testament without any English in it really well. That's my goal. I hope that's yours. We'll open up tonight with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we pray that your blessing would be upon all of us here as saints of you, the Most High God, that you would strengthen us and that in your word, and that our seeking of the Koine Greek would be something that would please you, which we understand that it will, and that it would be just so that we understand your scriptures better, so that we may have a more thorough knowledge, an epigenosko, a more thorough and adult and perfected knowledge of what you would have for us. And this we ask in the name of Christ, the creator of all things. Amen. Well, tonight we're going to do a little bit of review, okay? We're just going to be going back, doing some review, and then we're going to translate 11 sentences on page 33 of the text. That's at the end of lesson number 4, I believe. Then next week we're going to go through lesson number 5 again, and after that, you know, I might take me two more times to review lesson number 5, and then I really must push ahead into adjectives. I think that after a while, I was going to after a while, let me say this, that this text is going to get into more of the scriptures. It's going to get into verses in the scriptures itself, so I believe that that'll be a real exciting time. I had that maybe I would find examples of some of the things that we're learning right out of the scriptures, but I feel that that might be a little bit more confusing at this point. So we have to get the basics of things down first, and you know, again, you must hammer this over and over in your minds. I do recommend this. I recommend that you pick up a Koine Greek New Testament. You have a Koine Greek New Testament, I believe, in the Koine Greek New Testament that I sent to you guys, the Byzantine text. It's $15, $10 or $15. I have another 10 or 12 of them if anybody needs one. Basically, what it is it's pretty sure it's the New Testament text without any English in it. This is what I would recommend, that you open up that text and you just look at it line to line, And just, it doesn't matter what you know, it doesn't matter what you don't know. Just look at each form. Go particularly slowly looking it over. I think that's a good exercise. Even if you can't make out most of the forms, you'll make out a few of them, and I think that's a good thing to do for your minds in picking this language up. So let's turn to page 2 and 3 with the alphabet. I want you to read everything that I do out loud to yourselves out loud together. If you're with other people, don't be afraid to do it. The alphabet, pages 2 and 3, very important. Here we go. Alpha, Gamma, Delta, Epsilon, Zeta, Eta, Theta, Iota, Kappa, Lambda, Mu, Nu, T, Omicron, P, Rho, Sigma, Tau, Upsilon, Phi, Chi, Psi, Omega. And I believe in Revelation the Lord talks about himself being the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, and I believe that that principle, that principle has many meanings to it. He is the creator of all things. He was with God. He was the Word. He is the Word of God in John 1. So I believe that that particular phrase describing the Lord Jesus Christ as the Alpha and the Omega, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He knows all things from the beginning and to the end. So if you just studied the phrase Alpha and Omega, and you looked into all of the types that might come about from that, it would be very pleasing and very knowledgeable. Let's turn to page 12. I'm going to skip things because we've gone over some of these things at least a dozen times. I'm not getting harsh or anything like that, but thing of it is that unless you have a photographic memory, which I do not, I don't know if any of us do, but if you don't have a photographic memory, certainly this is going to be a lot to memorize. These paradigms, these endings, I know that. Thing of it is that we have to work with them. We have to get used to them. We have to work with these things. We have to see these things multiple times. I think what would be really pleasurable is if we actually see the things we learn out of this textbook right in the scriptures. I don't think that, I know the hearts of all you people, and I don't think you could have a greater thrill with the Greek than that. Even recognizing the form for I am, I think that would be awesome as we go. You learn bits and pieces, and eventually you're going to know more than you ever did before. So I think it's exciting, I really do. And we're not going to know all of these things and memorize all these paradigms unless you have a photographic memory. So let's go on. This is a very important paradigm on page 12. It's the paradigm for I have, and what's important here is to it's in the present tense, and what's important here is to look at the endings. The Greek root for is ek or echo, and then you notice the endings here on page 12 for the first, second, and third person singular, and the first, second, and third person plural. You'll see these endings in a lot of verbs in the New Testament. That's why they're important to know. On page 12 in the gray box in the middle, we have first, second, and third person singular, which would be echo, ekais, or actually ekais. Epsilon iota is pronounced as an A, as an eight. Ekais, eke. So it's I have, you have, he, she, or it has. Echo, ekais, eke. And then looking over to the plural, for we have, you all have, and they have, it's ekamen, ekata, and ekusin. Ekumen, Eketa, and Ekusin, or Ekusin. And those are very important endings, and you'll notice those endings occurring many times in the Greek New Testament. Now let's turn to page 14. And I've been hammering this box home a number of times because it's the seven tenses in the Koine Greek, seven, by the way. And all of these tenses are very important because as we go on, we're going to learn different tenses in the Koine Greek. And so far, we've been a little bit familiarized with the present tense and the future tense. And I told you before that the aorist tense is extremely important to our calling. It is. If you ever study the, especially the book of Ephesians in the New Testament, you'll find that many of the descriptions of the blessings that the Father have given us are in the aorist tense. That means that they're a one and for all, once and for all deal. We were raised with Him. We were seated with Him. We were buried with Him. All of those are in the aorist tense. And that means that it was an operation done by God once and for all, without ending. So, why am I saying that? Because we can take really some solace and some blessing and some extreme comfort from the fact that it doesn't matter what happens to us ultimately in the flesh here, that we have been saved, we have been raised, we have been seated in the Son of God. That is something that the Lord did, and it's a once and for all deal. No matter what states of mind we get into, or how much we might doubt things at times, I doubt things at times. Oscar Baker once told me. I said to him, I wrote to him in a letter. I said, "What do you think what is one of the greatest tools of the evil one?" And he said, "Doubt." He said, "Doubt." So, we live in this world. Our flesh can cause us problems. What we face can cause us problems. The world can cause us problems. And on top of that all, we have a spiritual being that loves to cause us problems. Thing of it is you could say, well, what are we going to do with all these problems? It seems like we have more problems than we know how to handle. Well, that could very well be the case. The fact of the matter is that if that brings you to your knees, so to speak, in ashes and sackcloth, that is awesome, because that's an awesome place to be when yourself is gone and you say, "Hey, Lord, I need you every minute of every day." That's an awesome place to be, and I believe that that's where He wants us to be. And I believe that your knowledge and I believe that your understanding of the Most High really gets poured on when you are really at a point where you are honestly humbled. You can say you're humbled, but to be honestly humbled might be another story. And I know a little bit about that. I'm not saying I'm any expert on anything, but I do know about what being humbled means and is, and I do know that I learn great things about the Lord when I have nowhere to go but Him, to Him. So let's go back to after my ranting on page 14 in this box here. We notice that we have the present, future, imperfect, aorist, perfect, pluperfect, and future perfect tenses. And you could say, that's crazy. How will I ever understand that? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to rework this a little bit. I'm going to rework the order of these tenses, and this might be helpful to you. It's helpful to me. All right. So this is what I would like you to do. Maybe in the book there, or on a separate piece of paper. What I'm going to do is I'm going to rewrite the order of these, and this is how I'm going to rewrite it. We're going to learn about the present tense, then the future tense, and the next one I put in there is the future perfect tense instead of the imperfect tense. Then I'm going to leave the aorist tense where it's at, and then I'm going to put the perfect tense, the pluperfect tense, and then lastly, I'm going to put the imperfect tense. And you know, why am I doing that? Well, the reason why I'm doing that is this, is that it might help your mind to learn these tenses a little bit better. So as far as the verb I love, in the present tense, it would be I love. In the future tense, it would be I will love. And then if we put the future perfect tense next, it would be I will have loved. That might help you learn the future perfect a little bit easier. I love, I will love, I will have loved is the future perfect. After that, I'm putting the aorist tense, which is I loved. And aorist is a completed action, a once and for all action. I loved. And then after that, you have the perfect tense, I have loved. And then the pluperfect tense, I had loved. I have loved, I had loved. I have loved, I had loved. I think the perfect and pluperfect tense are kind of like brothers together. You can learn them together. And then the future and the future perfect tense, you can learn those together. I will love, I will have loved. That might be a little bit easier. Then the aorist tense is I loved. And then after that, you have the perfect tense, I have loved, I had loved. And lastly, I put the imperfect at the end, I was loving. So I hope that made sense to you. I just reworked the order of those, and the reason why you should know present, future, future perfect, aorist, perfect, pluperfect, and imperfect tenses is because by the time you are done with this book, and by the time we're done with half of this book, it's just going to come out. It's going to come out, and you'll get a lot of joy from this. You're gonna get a lot of joy from knowing the difference between the future tense and the present tense, and the aorist tense and the future perfect tense. You're going to get a lot of joy out of it. And rather than don't bust your mind with oh man, you know, and start sweating it. We're just going to go with it. All right, we're just going to go with it. And so it's very important for you to learn those tenses on page 14, very important, okay, because that's going to come up for however long we're going to do this. And like I said, as long as the Lord has me around, if I'm going to do this over this wire, I'm going to be doing this. That's what's in my heart anyway. Let's turn to page 22. All right, we learned that the verb system in the Greek basically has two major conjugations, the omega conjugation, and then it has the mu iota conjugation. And we learned that one of the most important verbs of the mu iota conjugation is the verb eimi. And that's it's found, I believe, over 2,500 times in your Greek New Testament. So it's very important for you to learn this box, this paradigm, of I am on page 22, and notice it has first, second, and third person singular, just like the other paradigm that we learned about I have, and it also has first person, second person, and third person plural, and so it's important. We have I am, you are, he, she, or it is. And then we have we are, you all are. I'll put the all in there because it's plural. And they are. All right? So just if you, hey, listen, just if you learn this box alone, if you learned eimi, I am, a, you are, estin, he, she, or it is, esmen, we are, esta, you all are, and esin, or asin, partisin, they are, you could look into the New Testament scriptures and find these forms a lot. You can even do that as an exercise. Put this box in front of you. Take your New Testament Greek, not with any English. I think that's important. at least it's important to do, you know, periodically. Even though you might think, I don't understand any of this. Well, you will understand a little bit of it as you look through. And what I'm saying to you is I'm saying that that little bit of positive reinforcement is going to make you smile. If you're like me, which who knows if anybody wants to be, but if you're like me, it's going to make you smile. You're going to say, hey, I can pick up this Greek New Testament, and I know some things. I know at least some things in here. So do that. Take the paradigm for I am. Amy, I am. A, you are. Estine, he is. He, she, or it is. Esmen, we are. Esta, you are. Acene, they are. And you'll get a thrill out of it. I would bet on that, or, well, I shouldn't say that, but I'm positive that that's something very important for you to know, the paradigm for I am on page 22. Okay, let's turn to page 26. We're going to look at pages 26 and 27. So far, we've learned a few things. We learned about tenses. We learned a lot of things in the lessons that we went over a number of times. We know there's seven tenses. We also know that there are four basic cases that we should know in order that we might understand how sentences in the Koine go together and how we can tell the difference between the subject, the direct object, and the indirect object in a sentence. And we can do this. We can realize this at least a little bit as you go and look at your Byzantine text or whatever text you have in the Greek without the English. So let's on page 26 here in the gray box, the second declension nouns. We'll read that again. The primary goal of lesson number 4 is understanding the concept of the inflection or word change in the Koine Greek noun system. The inflection of a noun is called a declension. In a verb, the inflection of a verb is called a conjugation. Nouns of the second declension are studied first because they are of greater regularity, and because this declension contains the largest number of Koine Greek New Testament nouns. So we learn the second declension nouns first because, for the most part, they have more of them in the Koine Greek New Testament. Now, if you turn to page 27, we find the four cases. So far, you should learn about the seven tenses: present, future, future perfect, aorist, perfect, pluperfect, imperfect. What they're like, what they mean. Let's just say you practice them in the English, just so that you can say, well, the aorist tense means this with this verb. The pluperfect tense would be this with this certain verb. You can test yourself. It really isn't that hard. I think we get scared. We get scared off just immediately at something we're not familiar with. But the more you do it, the more familiar you'll get with it. Now, the four basic cases in the Koine Greek, we've been over this before, are the nominative, the genitive, the dative, and the accusative. Nominative, genitive, dative, accusative. Nominative, genitive, dative, accusative. And see, if you, let's just say you had an interlinear. And let's say, a Greek New Testament that had what's called form tags on it. That's where a Koine Greek form would have a number of letters below it that would tell you the gender, the case, the tense, the person underneath it. Well, you would automatically understand more about that, understanding these cases. You'd understand that the nominative case represents the subject of the sentence. You'd understand that the genitive case is one of possession. We are sons of God. that of God is in the genitive case because we belong to Him. He is the possessor of us. The genitive case, very important. The nominative case is the subject of the sentence. The dative case is the indirect object. He gave gifts to who? He gave gifts to men. That's the indirect object of that sentence. And the accusative case represents the direct object, as in apostles see men. So just in learning these four cases, the nominative is the subject of the sentence. The genitive is the possessor case. Of me, of God, of men, of women. That's automatically, you can understand that as being in the genitive. The dative case, the indirect object. Gifts are given to who? To men, to women, to sons of God, to believers in Christ. He gives us gifts to believers. And then the accusative case is the direct object of a sentence. Apostles see who? Apostles see men, so that they can be saved. So we can use these cases readily in our understanding. And all of us are adults, and all of us are people here tonight in the Lord, and that's because of who He is. And He can help us through this. There's no doubt about it. So I believe that these cases, as well as the tenses, are very important for you to just to know. It's a, I use a street term, it's a gas. It's a gas to know these things. All right, the four basic cases. Now, let's turn over to page 28. Now, in page 28, you've got a couple of paradigms there. And you go, oh no, here we go. Well, now wait a minute here. Now, these are paradigms. There are paradigms of two Greek forms. One of them is a masculine second declension noun. So what? Well, second declension nouns occur a lot in the Koine Greek New Testament. So there you have it. And we have masculine, and we're going to learn neuter second declension noun. So okay, we have endings here. We have endings in four cases, either in singular and in the plural, in the four different cases that we're supposed to learn. You don't have to worry about the vocative. That's the V. All we have to learn is four cases. So the reason why I'm turning to page 28 is because these endings in the masculine and neuter second declension nouns are very important to know. If nothing else, write them down, and don't hammer your minds. Don't make a big sweat over it. But I'll tell you this: you're going to see, like if we go to the first box in the nominative, anthropos, a man, in the genitive. Anthropou, of a man. Anthropo, to a man. And anthropon, a man. You're going to see those forms in the New Testament a lot. You're going to see a man. You're going to see of a man. You're going to see to a man. And you're going to see a man. You're going to see those actual forms in the New Testament a lot. So if you can, you notice the endings there. In the nominative, the ending is amen. It's omicron sigma. In the genitive, it's omicron upsilon. In the dative, it's omega iota subscript. And in the accusative, it's omicron nu. And then you go back and you remember. Wait a minute. What are these cases? What is this case? Well, we know that the nominative is the subject of the sentence. So, anthropos is a man used in a Koine Greek sentence where it's the subject of the sentence. Anthropou is of a man when it's used in the genitive in the sentence. Anthropo is to a man in a Koine Greek sentence in your scriptures talking about the indirect object, and it's anthropon, a man, when it's talking about the direct object. So you could take the singular, just the singular endings of this second declension masculine noun, and you could look through your scriptures, and you could just see if you can see any forms in there with these endings. You know, it takes work. Sure, you're not gonna get out of this without doing any work. I'm not gonna get out of this without doing any work. I mean, what are we gonna know about the scriptures if we sit around and listen to somebody, or if we don't do anything, like a bump on a log? Well, we do know that the Lord doesn't want us to be bumps on a log in His Word. You know, He's been trying to tell me that for 30 years now, or 35 years now, and every so often He gets through to me. We're supposed to be workmen, not ashamed, you know, and so it all depends upon how seriously we take that. And, you know, pretty soon for all of us, the tally's going to come in. I was going to say, I hate to say that, but I was reading in 2 Timothy yesterday about Paul finishing his course, and he knew that he finished his course. You know, he knew that. He knew that a crown of righteousness was going to for him. He knew that. And all I can say is that I hope I can say that. I hope I can say that a second before I fall asleep in the Lord, that I finished my course. I kept the faith. Therefore, a crown of righteousness is laid up for me in heavenly places. You know, Paul did that. He got, you know, if you read the last chapter of 2 Timothy, almost everybody took off on him. You know, I suppose I can say that sometimes for us it's going to be a lonely road. You know, and some of these guys, Demas and maybe a couple others, took off on him. But on the other hand, Mark and especially Luke hung tough with the Apostle Paul for, probably a couple of decades. And he hung tough with Paul to the end. So I think that, the Lord gives us subtle examples as far as these people are concerned. You know, and I think that, you know, if we want to sit back and cry and say, oh, this is lonely, it was lonely for the Lord. I think we should take a gather at what his life was like and what his mind was like, and if he suffered any rejection, if he suffered any loss, let's look at the Apostle Paul. Was he less human than you and I? No. Let me see, did he suffer any rejection? Maybe we couldn't handle the rejection that he suffered. You know, we like our friends, we like our family. Well, let's say we had none left. How about that? Let's say we had two friends left at the end. How about that? You know, I mean, you know, that's all very real to the Son of God and to one of the greatest apostles ever. So, you know, what are we supposed to learn from that? We have the same calling he did. So, even though we weren't chosen on the road to Damascus by a blinding light, we were certainly chosen by the Almighty to know our calling. So we're going to suffer some of these things, and in their own, in our own fashion. So let's not stumble. Let's not draw back. Let's not get too, don't get too like me, like whining and woe is me. Because we have a great God. Now let's go on here. All right, paradigms again. So let's look at page 28. These are very important. Second declension endings of masculine and neuter nouns in the New Testament. We look for four cases: the nominative, genitive, dative, and accusative. Nominative, genitive, dative, and accusative. Know what nominative means. Know what genitive means. Know what dative means. Know what accusative means. Nominative, genitive, dative, accusative. Pound that into your mind so you say nominative, subject, genitive, possessor, dative, indirect object, accusative, direct object. nominative, genitive, dative, accusative, just like that. Bam, people to reel those off. Bam, bam, bam. Then that'll reinforce if you understand, if you see these forms in a sentence and you understand their endings, then you'll say, oh, that's the direct object. Oh, that's the subject of the sentence. All right. So, the nominative masculine, we have anthropos, omicron sigma, sigma. For the genitive, anthropou actually, it's the omicron upsilon. In the dative, it's anthropo, that's with the omega iota subscript. And for the accusative, it's anthropon, that's the direct object. For the plural, we have anthropoi, you notice the omicron iota. In the genitive, we have anthropon in the genitive. In the dative plural, we have anthropois. You'll see that a lot. The dative, you'll see the dative plural a lot. The omicron iota sigma ending, and then for the accusative anthropous, you'll see that a lot. Also, you'll see all of those endings a lot. In the neuter, move to the other side of the page there. A little bit more difficult, but we have the neuter noun gift. Doron is in the nominative. Doru in the genitive. Doro in the dative. And Doran in the accusative. Down to the plural we have. In the nominative, Doron in the genitive. Dorois in the dative. And Dora. Dora in the accusative. Very important to learn those paradigms there about masculine and neuter second declension nouns. It's not, you know, what you have to do is go over it, hammer it. You know, I'll say this again. Any pro, like let's say the best wide receiver in the National Football League. He used to play for the 49ers. I forgot his name. Jerry Rice. That guy used to run and catch. He used to run and catch so much that it would make himself sick. That's what he did, and he became the best wide receiver in the NFL. And that's what we have to do. We have to run and catch in the Koine Greek. Go over it and over it and over it again until your mind just spews it out and you don't even have to think about it anymore. All right. Let's turn to the vocabulary on pages 31 and 32, and then we're going to get into some sentences. I got about 20 minutes left here. All right. We're talking about second declension nouns, masculine nouns. And tell me if these aren't important. Well, of course they're important in the New Testament, Koine Greek. Look at these masculine second declension nouns on page 31. Angelos, we notice that is that when you have two consonants together, the pronunciation of the form changes a bit. So this isn't angelos, it's angelos. It's not agalos, it's angelos. Pardon me, angelos, meaning angel. Agros, meaning field. Adelphos, meaning brother or fellow believer. Amartolos, actually it's a rough breathing, pardon me. It's Hamartolos, that's a sinner. Anthropos, and actually I should be pronouncing the definite article before that. You'll see an omicron with a rough breathing, that's pronounced ha. So, if we have ha anthropos, that's the man. The next one is ha apostolos, that's the apostle. The next one is ha diakonos, that's the minister. The next one we have is ha doulos, and I'm going to just scratch servant out of there, and I'm going to say from now on that doulos is a slave, because if you're a servant during the times of Paul, very, very rarely, wouldn't you be a slave. As a matter of fact, I think at the very least one out of three people in Rome was a slave. And I don't believe a slave could be bought or sold or killed at the whim. It was like they were like pieces of meat. A slave could be dismissed or killed. If one slave in a household did something wrong, the housemaster could kill all of them legally. Get rid of them all. So I believe that it would be very rare in the time of Paul that a doulos would be a servant that would be treated like a brother, let's just say. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe I'm right. But like I said, at least one out of three people in Rome was a slave. And they were like pieces of meat, like cattle. I do know that that's true to a big extent. So every time we see the Greek form doulos or doulon, I'm going to say it's a slave. Next form, thanatos. Thanatos, that's death. Next form, theos, or ha theos. I should be pronouncing the definite article. Ha theos, that's God. Next form is ha iesus. That's the Christ, or the Jesus. That's Jesus. Turning the page. The next form, the next masculine second declension noun form is ha kosmos, the world. The next form is ha kurios, the Lord. The next form is ha lithos, that's the stone. The next form is ha logos, that's the word. Now, I can't imagine that any of us wouldn't understand that these forms that even we're reading today are really important to our understanding of the Lord, no doubt about it. The next form, ha namas, the law. The next form, ha oikos, the house. The next form, ha axlas, the crowd. The next form, ha huias, the son. The next form, ha Christos, the Christ. And now we have neuter second declension nouns. We have ta, not ha, we have ta. That's a different definite article. That'll also help you to understand or to identify if the second declension noun is masculine or neuter. Because the masculine second declension noun would have the definite article ha, just the omicron. The neuter second declension noun would have ta, ta, tau omicron. Tau doron, the gift. Tau ergon, the work. Ta euangelion, the good message. Actually, I'd rather look at it as the good message, because there's many gospels. There's many gospels in the scriptures. There's not just one gospel. So, ta euangelion is the good message. Ta heiron, that's a rough breathing there over the Yoda. Ta heiron, that is the temple. Ta technon, that's the child. And then we have a couple of feminine second declension nouns here. Hey, we notice that the definite article changed. So hey is the feminine article. Hey eremos, the wilderness. Hey hodas, that is a rough breathing over the omicron there, the road or the way. Additional omega verbs, ginosko, and you know, there's a rule that the iota can either be iota or iota. And I don't know, you know, like some of us pronounce this ginosko, that could be correct. Or it could be ginosko. But I've heard, you know, of course we've heard it a lot, ginosko. I don't know why that is. I haven't found that out yet. Gary Darcy asked me that months and months ago. I still don't understand. Maybe when a iota can be long or short, whether it's iota or iota. For now, let's pronounce it ginosko. Ginosko, I know, very important to us. Lambano, I take or I receive. Lego, I say or I speak. Phedo, I bring or I bear. All very important Koine Greek forms. And then we have conjunctions, those things that connect sentence phrases together. We have Allah, but. We have duh, meaning now or but. We have kai, you'll see that many, many times. It means and, also, or even. And then when we have two chi's in the sentence, chi something something chi, it means both and. All right, let's look at a few sentences over on page 33. All right, and what we're going to do is we're going to translate a few sentences here, and you know, I'll run these out. I threw the first 11 of them just to give you an idea of how to use the endings that we went over. Basically, it would be good if you could look at page 18 and page 28 while we go over these. And remembering the vocabulary that we learned, we have sentence number one. It's this way. Graf, grafe, dulas, naman. And that what that means is that means a slave, a law. And we notice that the first form there, grafe, if you look, you know, this is a little tedious, but we're going to do this again. Hold on a second. One second. Well, we noticed that we translated this, a slave writes a law. And we noticed that if we the word for slave, we already noticed that in on page number 31. Doulas, ha doulas. Look on page 31. This is going to be a little tedious, but this is how you put it together. Page 31, you notice that doulos is a masculine second declension noun. And then, if you look at page 28, look at page 28, and you'll notice in the nominative singular of the masculine, you'll notice that the ending is omicron sigma. So what does that tell you? It tells you that the slave is the subject, because it's in the nominative. Do you understand that? The slave writes. Who writes? Okay, how do we know he writes? Well, grafe, we have to find where grafe is mentioned as a verb. As a verb, if we turn back to page 23, you'll notice that grafo on page 23 towards the top is a verb meaning to I write, okay? So the slave writes, but how do we know it isn't more than one slave? Well, if we look on page 18 and we notice, turn to page 18 and we notice the ending that's on the verb graf, it's grafe. Epsilon iota, and that means that he, she, or it in the singular writes. So, the slave, he writes. Grafe, the slave writes. And then, what is the direct object of the sentence? It's noman, or naman. I'm sorry, naman. It's not noman, it's naman. And what is a naman? Well, if we look at, page number 32, we notice that ha namas is a law. Well, then, we know that the slave writes a law. How do we know that the law is the direct object of the sentence? Well, what we do is we turn to page 28 again and notice that naman, we know is a masculine second declension noun. And if we look at the accusative ending, in the singular on page 28, accusative, masculine, singular, the ending is omicron nu, naman. So, very simply, the slave, which is doulos, with the ending omicron sigma, that's the subject, it's in the nominative. Grafe, that's a verb to write, but it has the third person singular ending on it. That means the slave writes. What does he write? Well, he writes a law. And he doesn't write many laws. He writes a law because Naaman is a masculine singular noun in the accusative. What does the accusative mean? Is the accusative the subject of the sentence? No. The accusative is the direct object. So we have the slave as the subject. He writes, and he writes a law in the singular, and that the law is the direct object of that sentence. A slave writes a law. That's what that means, and that's how you figure that out. All right, let's look at sentence number two. Maybe I'll get through a few of these. I wanted to get through 11 of them, but I can always pick this up. These things are very important, very, very important, because just what we went over tonight, you can, along with the vocabulary, along with knowing the diphthongs, along with you knowing the indicative active endings that are on page 18, with knowing the second declension noun endings on page 28, you can start looking into your Koine Greek scriptures without the English. It doesn't matter what you know. It doesn't matter. Don't get bent out of shape. Just look it over. Your mind will go, man, I don't know a lot of this. So what? That's what this is all about. All of a sudden you're gonna notice something. Again, the paradigm for I am we went over. You're gonna see the different persons of I am in the scriptures. And pick it up. So let's turn to sentence 2 on page 33. Gnosketa thanatam. Gnosketa thanatam. Now notice the endings there. And notice and find out what these forms mean. Well, the translation of sentence number 2 is you all, we're going to put the all in there, you all know death. You know death. You all know death. Oh, really? Well, how did you get that? Well, to know, we know, is second declension, it's a verb form on page number 30, page 32, gnosko, I know. Gnosko. All right, we know that. And then if we turn to page number 18 again, we'll notice that page 18 at the top, we'll notice that the verb endings in the second person plural is eta. Is eta. So, gnosita means you all know. And then, who knows? Or you all know. You all know what? And we know that the Greek form thanata is, turning back to page number 31, you'll see that thanatos means the death. And that in the sentence here, we have thanatan. Well, how do we know that is not the subject of the sentence? Well, if you turn to page 28 and you look at the singular accusative ending, you'll see that, like anthropon, thanaton is in the accusative. So, is the subject, you all, and thanaton being in the accusative is the direct object. So, we can understand that thanaton, or death, is not the subject, it's the direct object by the ending. Can you see that? So, the translation correctly of sentence number 2 on page 33 is you know death, or you all know death. All right, let's move on. to sentence number three. Sentence number three reads, Leusin Adelphoi Doulas. Leusin Adelphoi Doulas. And the correct translation to sentence number three is brothers lose slaves. Alright, so looking at the endings, we know that Adelphoi, again, you know, Adelphoi is a, according to page 31, is a masculine second declension noun. It means brother. Whole Adelphos means brother. We know that we notice the ending here, Adelphoi, if we look at page 28, we notice that brothers, Adelphoi, is in the nominative plural. What does that mean? What does the nominative case mean? The nominative case in a sentence means that it's the subject of the sentence. Adelphoi, it's plural. Brothers are the subject of the sentence. Alright, what do the brothers do? Leusin. Oh, really? Okay, Leusin. We notice that if we look at back at page 18, we'll notice that the ending, usin, is in the third person plural. This goes along with the fact that they, the brothers, did something. Usin is the third person plural ending in the verb form. So, looking and then we have to understand what they're doing. So, what does luo mean? Well, from page 18, we understand that the Greek form luo means I loose. All right, and if you look on page 18, at the bottom of the page, in the present tense, third person plural, luusin, with the usin ending, means they loose. It's right there at the bottom of page 18 to the left. Luusin, they loose. So we understand that they loose, the brothers, which is in the nominative case, meaning that that's the subject. The brothers are loosing something. What are they loosing? Well, they're loosing the doulos, the doulos, I mispronounce that. They're loosing the doulos. Well, we do know that doulos means slave, and that it is, if we turn over to page 31 again, it's a second declension, masculine noun. How do we know that it's not the subject of the sentence? Well, we turn back to page 28. That's why these endings are very important. And we notice that doulos has the omicron upsilon sigma ending, which is the masculine accusative plural ending, meaning that doulos is the direct object in that sentence because it is in the accusative case. Brothers, loose, slaves. The brothers is in the nominative, slaves is in the accusative, they loose is in the third person plural ending as verbs go. So it's all put together, it all makes sense. And what I'll do then, it looks like we're going to be doing a bit more review than possible, is I'm going to start up with sentence number four next time, and we'll do I might just run over I might run over a little bit of review real quick, and then I'm going to get to translating sentences 4 through 11 next time, and then we're going to move into we're going to go over first declension nouns in lesson 5 again. I know this is a lot. There's endings that you have to learn. As far as first declension nouns are concerned, on pages 35 and 36, actually 36 at the bottom of the page has them all combined into one paradigm. And then very importantly, if you look on page 37, you have all of the definite articles listed there. all of the definite articles in the four cases. Take a gander at that. And even if you just know those definite articles all over the Koine Greek New Testament, thing of it is that, again, if you hammer page 28 into your head, hammer it into your head, hammer it into your head, hammer into your head the paradigm for I am, I am me, and then eventually, believe it or not, you're going to have to hammer into your head pages 36 and 37, the endings to the first declension nouns, and then the definite articles. But I'll tell you, if you start hammering these into your head, and then you go into the Koine New Testament without the English, it doesn't matter what you understand or what you don't understand, you will see things. Your mind will pick things up, and you'll say, hey, I've seen that before. And hey, I possibly know what that is. And then you can go back to your text here just to reinforce your brain. And you can do it again. Hammer it into your head. And so, next time, we're going to translate lines 4 through 11 on page 35. You should have it, or no, not 35, page 33. And I'm just going to go through 11 and move on because we got to get going. And that is to say in this text. But you should have a good understanding of how to translate these sentences by the three we went over. It's tedious, yeah, it's tedious, but still, if you hammer this into your head, you're going to notice these endings after a while. You're going to notice the difference. You're going to say to yourself, hey, that ending goes with this case, and hey, that ending isn't singular, it's plural, like that. You will. So all it takes is the Lord in you. So, next time, I'm going to have to figure out when next time is. But again, I'm going to try to make these sessions, rather than a month apart, I'm going to try to step them up at least to 3 weeks apart, possibly 2 weeks apart. And because we got to... Are we doing anything on March 17th? Okay, well, I'll tell you what. March 17th. That's 3 weeks from today. March 17th, we'll do it again. All right? So thanks very much. We love all you people. That's for sure. We love the Lord. That's for sure. And I'm just thankful that you people are here with me tonight. At first, I thought I knew that Doherty was going over. Doherty and Tony were going over to Jim and Jan's. I didn't know where anybody was going to be, and so before I got on here tonight, I almost started crying and stuff, and I didn't know if anybody was going to be with me, but we know the Lord's always with us, right? And so thanks a lot.